Tune into KPBS Podcasts, where San Diego's voices come alive.
Don't let the algorithm tell you what you like. Find things that you really enjoy.
It's really powerful to see how the voice of the students impacted so much change.
Said, seguimos aquí. We're still here.
Listen now at kpbs.org/podcasts or wherever you listen.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Monday, May 18th. We took a look into who the owner of a local ICE detention center is. More on that next, but first, the headlines. California Governor Gavin Newsom late last week proposed a revised budget for the state that shows no deficit. The Associated Press reports that Newsom laid out a $350 billion spending plan over the next 2 years that includes a minimal amount of new spending and avoids major cuts. The state's projected deficit in January was nearly $3 billion. The AP says that revenues, mostly coming in from the booming stock market and AI industries, came in $16.5 billion higher than initially projected, helping to close the projected deficit. The final budget needs to be approved by the end of June. Starving birds are dying along our Southern California coast. Times of San Diego reports that as ocean temperatures rise, fish are being pushed further out into the ocean where there are cooler, deeper waters that are out of reach for seabirds. Scientists told Times of San Diego that as long as ocean water temperatures remain warmer than usual, seeing dead birds on our beaches could become more common. County supervisors, city council members, SANDAG, and youth advocates all gathered on Friday to celebrate the extension of MTS's Youth Opportunity Pass. The event took place at Chula Vista's Palomar Transit Center trolley station. The Youth Opportunity Pass guarantees continued free transit rides for San Diego County youth over the next 3 years. The pass is intended to help offset travel costs for working families and was approved at a SANDAG budget meeting earlier this month. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need. The Imperial Regional Detention Facility in Calexico is one of 8 ICE detention centers in California. It's widely considered a for-profit operation. That's because ICE relies on a private prison company to run the facility. But Imperial Valley reporter Corey Suzuki found that who actually owns the facility is more complicated.
See, these are original doors, and these are the original signs that are up here. So
I'm at a small theater building in Brawley, in northern Imperial County. It feels like it's been empty for years. The walls are bare and peeling. The floor is covered in dust and pigeon droppings. At the back of the building, part of the ceiling is missing, revealing a band of blue sky.
The next phase of this project is to build the stage and then build the put in the roof above it, which will go about 20 feet above the existing roof.
That's Tim Kelly. By the end of the year, he says this historic theater will be renovated and open for business. Kelly is a founder and board member of a local nonprofit called the Brawley Community Foundation, which owns the theater. He says the foundation was created to improve downtown Brawley by acquiring old buildings, renovating them, and using the money to buy other properties.
If our mission is to improve the economy of the region and create jobs and generate taxes, we'll look at different strategies.
But downtown buildings aren't the only properties that the Brawley Community Foundation has invested in. Records obtained by KPBS show the foundation is also the owner of the Imperial Regional Detention Facility, a federal immigrant detention center, which sits about 20 miles to the south. The facility is run by Management and Training Corporation, a private company based in Utah. The company has been accused in court records and other complaints of abuses, like providing undercooked food and holding people in solitary confinement, allegations ICE denies. Federal inspectors have also found the facility violated ICE's own standards for medical care. Since President Trump's return to power, 2 people have died after experiencing health crises there. According to the records we obtained, the foundation has been closely involved with the detention center since the beginning.
I think we look at opportunities that are going to create jobs and generate taxes that are going to benefit our community, and that's what this did.
Kelly says his charity's ownership of the detention center is a community benefit because of the jobs it brings to Imperial County, a majority Latino region with one of the highest unemployment rates in the state. But that's not what Christian Salgado thinks. She's with the Imperial Liberation Collaborative, a local immigrant rights group.
I don't see the detention center as a community benefit. I don't think the jobs that come out of it really outweigh the harm that it creates.
Experts on nonprofits say the foundation's ownership of the detention center is unusual. Jeff Green leads the California Association of Nonprofits.
I can give you a personal opinion and say that, you know, that does not sound to me like a charitable purpose.
The foundation's nonprofit status means it's gotten better interest rates on loans. This is because of something called the municipal bond market, a special marketplace where state and local governments go to get loans for big projects like roads and bridges.
That market, over time, has kind of developed to also serve some private entities. And, you know, one of the key groups that can borrow through this municipal bond market are nonprofit organizations.
Todd Ely is a professor at the University of Colorado, Denver. He says nonprofits have special access to tax-exempt bonds in particular, which have lower interest rates.
So it really is a cost savings benefit that accrues right to the borrower.
Those bonds aren't the only benefit. Records obtained by KPBS show the foundation has also used its nonprofit status to apply for a special tax break called the welfare exemption. That's typically reserved for charities, along with hospitals, scientific research, and houses of worship. State and county officials have awarded those tax breaks since 2016, excusing the foundation from paying at least $6 million in property taxes on the detention center property. To Salgado, this arrangement is confusing and unsettling.
It is upsetting to know that, you know, I would refer to them as loopholes, were kind of being exploited.
Green, the Association of Nonprofits leader, also questions whether the foundation should be getting these tax breaks.
It sounds to me like they made the argument to the county assessor that detaining people in an ICE facility is a public benefit of some kind. And, you know, for better or for worse, that goes into local politics.
Tomorrow, we'll take a closer look at who decides who counts as a charity in California. In Brawley, Corey Suzuki, KPBS News.
Refugees from countries like Iraq and Afghanistan have for years settled in El Cajon. And since the turn of the century, the multi-generational community has become a part of the city's fabric. In part two of a two-part series, East County reporter Elaine Alfaro shows how one organization has supported refugees.
The walls at License to Freedom are painted vivid colors, tangerine, lime green, and pomegranate. This is not by accident. It's so the offices of this organization serving El Cajon's refugee community feel like a home. Specifically, a home in Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, or a number of other Middle Eastern and North African countries. Kamar Amwali is one of the therapists at License to Freedom.
You'll see the names of the rooms or the way they were designed, such as like the living room or the kitchen, to kind of mimic that feeling.
She says spaces like the kitchen set the table for the sometimes challenging conversations that she has with her clients about their homeland and their new life in a country thousands of miles away, which is why a safe space is needed.
We work with a lot of families and kids who come in into here, and also just like a lot of people whose homes maybe represent some of what it looks like here. So that's what we are trying to do, is replicate the feeling of just being at home and feeling comfortable.
El Cajon has one of the largest refugee communities in San Diego County. It began in the 1970s and 80s when Chaldeans, mainly Christians from Iraq, settled in the city. Over the decades and through several wars, it's become a hub for asylum seekers and immigrants from the Middle East and North Africa. Business signs in both English and Arabic line El Cajon's main street. Conversations in Arabic, Dari, and other languages and dialects drift in and out of shops and restaurants. All of this is a testament to the energy and resilience of the immigrant communities. But behind the vibrant streets and storefronts, there is the trauma, loss, and insecurity that comes with the refugee experience. The need to address these issues is why Dilkwaz Ahmed created License to Freedom in 2002.
And I just realized something gotta be done for my community. We need to create a space for them.
License to Freedom offers a range of support services, including housing navigation, therapy, case management, language classes, and more. There's an emphasis on supporting women who often bear family trauma. This draws from the experience Ahmed, the founder, had as a new refugee. She started with a simple goal, helping women learn to drive and get their driver's license, a big step toward independence.
When I came, there were zero services to meet the needs of refugee and immigrant communities, especially when it comes to issues of domestic violence. Zero.
On Monday mornings, a small group of around 10 women meet with case manager Nahid Sadiq and therapist Dr. Niyati Kadakia to talk about raising their children and adjusting to life in the U.S.
Yes, and how did that make you feel?
One morning, Kadakia led the women through a practice where they were encouraged to connect to their younger selves.
When you were thinking of you as this child, how was the feeling?
She also had them write love letters to themselves. Here's Kadakia.
So there is this beautiful, almost pull and push of navigating this new identity, this new feminine, strong identity, while also grappling with cultural definitions of what it means to be a good woman.
In addition to group meetings, Ahmed created a class to help women start their own businesses. Marwa Hassan took the class.
I just attend the classes and it was very helpful to me. Everyone was nice and they supported me a lot.
She's now a community specialist for License to Freedom and runs a small business from her home. She makes and sells personalized art pieces that connect to her culture.
Here, we missed many stuff that represent our culture.
Hassan found that running her business and engaging with her clients has helped her retain her cultural connections.
You feel that you have power and you can do more and more for your family first and for the community around you.
Ahmed says that mentality proves these folks are here to make El Cajon their home. Elaine Alfaro, KPBS News.
The California Housing Partnership has released its annual Affordable Housing Needs Report. Reporter Katie Heisen says the numbers may be glimmers of hope in an ongoing crisis.
State and federal funding for housing in San Diego County fell this last fiscal year by almost 10%. Still, thousands of new rent-restricted units were constructed or acquired, a 90% increase from the year before. It's needed. Almost 80% of the county's extremely low-income households pay more than half their income on housing. And nearly 130,000 low-income renter households don't have access to an affordable home. But those numbers are down slightly from the year before. Stephen Russell is the president of the San Diego Housing Federation.
Maybe we've hit the bottom of the depth of the crisis, but we're still underwater.
Russell says San Diego hasn't built enough housing to meet demand since 2004. He estimates about 150,000 more homes are needed. He thinks San Diego's largest employers should get involved in the effort. And there's a measure on the ballot he thinks could help, a tax on vacant homes.
There's no one silver bullet. We need to do all of these things if we're going to see the other side of this crisis.
Katie Heisen, KPBS News.
The San Diego County Board of Supervisors is set to vote on proposed reforms to the county's charter on Tuesday. Reporter Alexander Wen says they'll also hear proposed amendments to those reforms.
Changing the charter is not a simple vote that can be reversed.
Supervisor Joel Anderson says the reforms set forth by Board Chair Tara Lawson-Reamer were rushed and riddled with errors. Anderson was one of two votes against the proposed reforms last month. He says major reforms such as this need careful consideration. This is the first time the county will be updating the charter in nearly 50 years. Among Anderson's amendments is to leave term limits as they are. Currently, supervisors are limited to 2 4-year terms. Lawson-Reamer's proposed reforms would extend that to 3 terms. Anderson says that's self-serving.
My proposal makes sure that the currently elected supervisors cannot extend their own term limits.
In a statement, Lawson-Reamer says these amendments would hollow out the reforms the county residents are asking for. The charter reforms are set to be discussed Tuesday. If passed, they'll head to a public vote in November. Alexander Nguyen, KPBS News.
In a busy election year, there's one state office that sometimes is overlooked, the lieutenant governor. Military and veterans reporter Andrew Dyer went to a veterans roundtable with Democratic candidate Josh Friday.
Josh Friday met with 9 local veterans. The Navy veteran says as lieutenant governor, he can make an impact on 2 of the issues people care about most, education and housing. High-tech high school teacher Elise Jenkins was a Marine Corps reservist. She says she appreciates the opportunity to talk with somebody who could soon be in a position to help teachers.
I think that our budget should reflect what we say we care about. I don't know of a single teacher in California where on their income alone they could afford to live on their own.
Friday's earned key endorsements, but is in a crowded Democratic field that includes State Treasurer Fiona Ma and former Stockton Mayor Michael Tubbs. Even the leading Republican was recently a Democrat. Gloria Romero spent more than a decade in the state legislature before switching to the Republican Party in 2024. Andrew Dyer, KPBS News.
Council hearings on San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria's revised budget proposal begin today. As city leaders decide how to balance the budget, so can you. Web producer Brendan Tucciannardi tells us more about our new interactive budget game.
The KPBS Budget Challenge lets San Diegans choose new expenses, raise revenues, and cut costs to close the city's $118 million deficit. This is the second year in a row the city is facing a shortfall, and to close the gap, San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria is proposing a series of cuts to arts and culture grants, libraries, rec centers, and more. Gloria has said the cuts are what's required for the city to live within its means, and the budget challenge gives players a taste of what it takes for the city to do that. We've pulled line items directly from the proposed budget and included suggestions from the audience. For example, players can choose to cut the police budget by 5%, repeal the trash fee, or reduce funding for arts and culture grants. Brendan Tucciannardi, KPBS News.
Do you think you have what it takes to balance the city's budget? Play now at kpbs.org/budget challenge. That's it for the podcast today. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening and subscribing. By doing so, you're supporting public media, and I want to thank you for that. Have a great day.
Hola, friends.
In this episode of Port of Entry, we unpack the fear, headlines, and misconceptions that often shape how people in the U.S. see the border.
We sit down with Tijuana native Jorge Meraz, the host of Crossing South, who spent years showing different sides of the region. We share what it's really like to cross between Tijuana and San Diego as part of everyday life.
You don't want to miss this episode. Catch Port of Entry wherever you get your podcasts.
At 10 o'clock, they're happy. How is she dead 2 hours later?
When a San Diego police officer is found dead in her home, who investigates? Follow One of Their Own, a new podcast from KPBS, wherever you listen.